Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook, was a cook, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at tailormade101.com. That's T-A-I. LORMADE101.com for details. I would like to say hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jima and I are excited to be with you once again. So let's take a look at what's on tap. First, Happy New Year to everybody. We're excited about 2012. Everything it has to offer. We're so excited and we're glad that you've chosen us to share it with you. First up, of course, the GOP. Yeah, that's right. Another GOP debate. This time, it's in New Hampshire. Speaking of Republicans, did you hear what they had to say about black people? There's not a whole lot that surprised me these days, but I must admit, I was taken aback when I heard some of the key past and present elected officials' comments this week. We will revisit them and take your calls. It's playoff time. Who's going to win it all? Give us your Super Bowl picks. And, of course, tomorrow's BCS National Championship game, Alabama versus LSU. And, of course, I am picking Alabama to win it all and to edge out over LSU by a last-minute field goal. Now, rumor has it, Beyonce and Jay-Z are proud parents of a little girl named Blue Ivy Carter. And today's question, would you give your child cookies for breakfast? All of these we will be talking about today. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button and follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I will be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also want to open up a chat room. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bill, we've got you covered. We want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at our current events. Before we get started, I want to kind of let Mariah Carey and Nick Cannon know that our prayers are with them. A few days ago, Mariah shared on Twitter that her husband, Nick Cannon, was in stable condition after his having an episode of a mild kidney failure. It's being reported that she said Nick is now in stable condition with a good prognosis. Hopefully, he will be discharged sometime early this week, next week. So may God continue to bless Mariah, Nick, and their family. I know they just had twins not too long ago. So, of course, we want them to make sure that they grow up, both of their parents. So we're rooting for Nick Cannon. So let's turn to our current events now. The GOP debate. Now, today, there was a special edition of Meet the Press live from New Hampshire. And, of course, this is another debate. And the issues this time was jobs and the economy, America's role in the world, and the candidates' electability went up against President Obama. Now, this debate comes on the heels of another one from last night. For the life of me, I am not sure why it is necessary to have so many debates. Now, for one thing, they are saying that the same thing over and over and over again. And the moderators continue to give them a pass on the issues. Secondly, they offer no solutions. I can say up until last night, I found them amusing. But now, they are a waste of my time. If I was ever considering being a Republican, the last few weeks have sickened me so much that I can no longer even fathom becoming a part of the GOP. Now, the famous words of W.E.B. Du Bois rang out over a century ago. The words that he written so eloquently, and I quote, "The problem of the 20th century is the problem of the color line, the relation of the darker to the lighter races of men in Asia and Africa, in America and the islands of the sea. It was a phase of this problem that caused the Civil War. I would suggest that we are approaching another phase. Over the past couple of weeks, the racial undertones coming from elected officials, past and present, whom are seeking public office, said the following. And so I am prepared. If the NAACP invites me, I'll go to their convention and talk about why the African-American community should demand paychecks and not be satisfied with food stamps." Now, before when I was coming up with this segment, I was thinking about not trying to generalize when I talked about Republicans, because I wanted to say, is the Republican Party racist? But I said, well, I mean, that's an unfair assessment for everybody in the Republican Party. And so it bothers me to see that Newt Gingrich, the one who made this comment, try to generalize when it comes to African Americans. He's implying that all African Americans are on food stamps, or all African Americans are somewhat poor or somehow bleeding the United States government of their funds. And Rick Santorum is not too far from that. And so I really want you to get you to weigh in on this, because maybe I'm kind of way out to lunch here when I say these comments. The number to call is 323-580-5712. 323-580-5712. I want you to weigh in on this. I want you to listen to one more thing with respect to a GOP elected official being insensitive. That's the language that I use for this particular segment. I didn't say they were racially biased or they were racist. I say they were insensitive to African Americans. And so here's another example of that taking place. In Lawrence, Kansas, House Speaker Mike O'Neill apologized Thursday for forwarding an email poking fun at First Lady Michelle Obama and referring to her as Mrs. Yo Mama. The Lawrence Journal World reported Thursday that O'Neill, a Hutchinson Republican, sent the email from his personal account. The email also had a photo comparing Mrs. Obama to the Grinch. And the subject line says, "Twins separated at birth." you be the judge. When we return, I'm going to play the actual soundbite from Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum, and I want you to weigh in on this. And, of course, joining me live in the studio will be Jima, the famous Jima from the Ask Jima blog. That's right. She'll be in the studio. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, Tailor Made Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, Tailor Made's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Point friend.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. And joining me live in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and chief operating officer for TaylorMade Training and Consulting. I introduce to some and present to others, Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, first of all, let me say Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
And happy anniversary.
And happy anniversary to you, too.
Awesome, awesome. So I want to get right into it. The GOP debate. They have had an umpteen, I'm going to go back to my country, Alabama roots, an umpteen amount of debates this season. Why so many debates?
Well, you have to remember who we're dealing with here, and I think the race may have started in the beginning with maybe 10 or 11 people all vying for that top spot, and none of them have really been able to break through. Not even the, you know, alleged front runner is doing all that well. So I think they've been trying to find their message as they go along. And they know without a shadow of a doubt that whoever gets in as the party's nomination will have needed all the practice they can get in a debate setting as they go to debate President Obama during the election cycle. So that's, you know, really what it comes. I think it's just practicing. The unfortunate thing is, I believe it was you who said this, or maybe some other commentator that made the statement that, you know, if I'm in a room of third graders, of course I appear smarter than everybody in the room because they're third graders. But you put me in a room with people the same age as I, then I may not appear as smart. So I think whoever the front runner for this week may appear to be something more than what they really are. And once they get up against the real thing, then they're going to see how far they really have to go.
You know, yeah, I've been accredited for saying that several times. But, you know, watching the debates over the past several times that I've watched it, I used to be amused by it, by them. And I thought they were pretty fun to watch, and I thought I was able to, you know, get something from them. But let me ask you this. Have you learned anything from the GOP candidates over the last several debates?
Yeah, that they're crazy.
Okay. That's fair.
I've learned that they have some pretty extreme ideas about America. I want to take my country back, because the one they're talking about is not the America that I know and love. So I'm not really sure what America they're talking about, but it cannot be the one that has produced some of the greatest minds that we have. And so I'm not real sure who they're talking about. So, yeah, I've learned some things, that they are extreme in their views, that they have bought into every stereotype one can have of a race of people. They have no respect for our military, for our young men and women that are serving in our military, based on how they allow others to treat them. So I've learned a lot. Like you, I can no longer stomach listening to them. It's like I break out in hives or something. I just start itching because their tone and tenor is so condescending and so full of superiority that I just cannot stand to listen to them anymore. I'm done with them. I have to pay attention because that's what I do, but at the end of the day, they have really painted such a horrible picture of the Republican Party at this juncture. And that's not to say all Republicans think like they think, because none of them, even combined, they don't have 100% of anything. So it's obvious that they're not even really getting to the meat of what their party is all about. But it's just been sad to see, really, some of the low blows that they've thrown. It's been pretty sad.
You know, that's what I was saying earlier, that, you know, if I was contemplating becoming a Republican or trying to really give them the benefit of the doubt by listening to their views or by trying to understand their positions on the issue, they continue to be irrational, that it's hard to even grasp or imagine being a Republican at all. You know, I from the candidates, and the reason why I don't want to, you know, extend this, my idea, my perception beyond the candidates, because those are the people that their views will be what would be trying to be represented across the nation. So I want to kind of focus in on them and try to figure out what they're talking about, but nothing they say makes sense to me. So that's why, you know, I encourage, you know, if you're a Republican out there listening, you know, help me understand your views. Help me understand when a candidate says they want less government, and they continue to talk about funding government programs. I mean, everything they say is a major contradiction. You know, Jimmy, what do you say about that?
Yes, everything they say, not only is it a major contradiction, but it's just at the end of the day, none of what they're talking about is going to work. It's so not logical, some of the things that they talk about and some of the things that they want to do here in the country. It's just not logical. And then they make these assumptions, like I stated earlier, about groups of people that are just untrue, and they speak it in such a manner that it's supposed to be true just because they said it. you know, and so it's just I'm not real sure where to go from here with this group of candidates. I mean, I've kind of been there in the beginning, trying to see who would, you know, where the dust would settle. And although, you know, Mitt Romney right now is the one that's heir apparent, so to speak, you know, he hasn't said anything about anything. He does a lot of ducking and dodging. He does a lot of talking about President Obama. But, you know, his record speaks for him already. So I'm not real sure how he's even still in the race, except for all the money he has.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. And that's, I guess that's another reason why it's hard for me to kind of get my head wrapped around what the Republican Party is doing. Because if Mitt Romney was a true front runner and, you know, he has all of this money, then why is it that the Republican Party, people that are already Republicans, can't get on, get on board with him? When you look at the last couple of different, especially the Iowa caucuses, there was a close race between Mitt and Ron Paul and Rick Santorum. But the fact that the vote was so spread, it was so spread thin that you really don't understand who is the true front runner, because it keeps going up and down, and Mitt stays around 25-30%, and everybody else is taking 20-25%. So, and then in the debates, they're not really showing a stark contrast to each other. You know, so if I was trying to become a Republican or was really interested in being in a Republican Party, there is nothing, there's no substance there for me to grab a hold of.
Right, right. At the end of the day, after they've, you know, said all they can say about the president and bashed him down and talked about his policies that they continue to say have failed America, although we've seen continued job growth since he's come into office, although we see our unemployment numbers going down, and although, you know, so many things he has done, but yet they continue to want to attack his leadership as it relates to the economy. They even now are so bad as to want to talk about his foreign policy leadership, which is crazy, because now all of a sudden, you know, what he's done as it relates to going and getting Bin Laden doesn't mean anything. You know, now they want to make it be like, oh, it wasn't that big of a deal. It's amazing to me how they try to spin things into their favor. But what's even more amazing is that there's probably a crop of people we know there is, that believe what they're saying and really believe that what they're saying is true, and they will vote in against their best interest come election time simply because these people have convinced them that they can do better than President Obama is already doing. I mean, he's already doing it. Everything they're talking about is theory. Just like when he was running, a lot of things he thought he was going to be able to do, once he got in there, he wasn't able to do them for a number of reasons. But primarily just because things were a lot worse off than what we thought they were as it relates to our economy. And I think that's probably the one thing that they don't want to see. I agree with some strategists that say that there are some that really don't want the economy to get better because the Republicans want to be able to run on that in the election time. And that's sad that they are willing to put the livelihood of millions of Americans on hold so they can win an election. That's pretty sad. And then to take credit, I don't know if you had seen this or read this, Rick Santorum says that, I think it was Rick Santorum, states that the reason why the economy has turned around is because the investors and people in the market are confident that the Republicans are going to take back over the White House. So now,
you know,
it's okay now for them to do something because they know a Republican is going to take back over. Are you serious?
Right, right. I don't understand him. So speaking of Rick Santorum,
do we have to?
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, me looking in the context of trying to give the Republican Party the benefit of the doubt, trying to listen to their argument, trying to understand their issues, trying to see if, you know, if they really have my, as an African American male, best interest in mind. And so I listen to their language, I listen to their rhetoric about, you know, what they're going to do for America if they're in office. And so it struck me as odd by the recent comments that Rick Santorum made. And so I'm going to play them right now. I want you to take a listen, and I want to get you to respond.
I was in Indianola a few months ago, and I was talking to someone who works at the Department of Public Welfare here, and she told me that the state of Iowa is going to get fined if they don't sign up more people under the Medicaid program. They're just pushing harder and harder to get more and more of you dependent upon them so they can get your vote. That's what the bottom line is. I don't want to make people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money. I want to give them the opportunity to go out and earn the money and provide for themselves and their families.
You said that you don't want to make black people's lives better giving them somebody else's money.
I've seen that quote. I haven't seen the context in what that was made. Yesterday I talked, for example, about a movie called, Waiting for Superman, which was about black children. And so I don't know whether it was in response, and I was talking about that. So let me just say, no matter what, I want to make every lives better. I don't want anybody. And I think if you look at what I've been saying, I've been pretty clear about my concern for dependency in this country and concern for people not being more dependent on government, whatever their race or ethnicity is.
Okay. Again, me looking at through the lens of, you know, if the Republican Party have my best interest as an African-American male, let me take a listen to what they have to say. And so he makes a comment in New Hampshire doing his retail politicking, and he's talking about the Medicaid program in New Hampshire, where the percentage of African-Americans are in single digits, the lower single digits, and he injects African-Americans into the conversation. Because if you're talking about the context of the Medicaid program at that local community, you can't be talking about black people. So why is it then, Jima, that he's injecting African-Americans in the conversation and then in such an insensitive, derogatory fashion?
Well, some will say that, you know, that plays to the base and that it keeps people who are, you know, race baiters tuned in at every turn. Some would say that it's a slight dig at the president to ensure that this president is trying to do all he can for black people, which is extremely odd because if you were to ask most people in the black community, there are some that think the president hasn't done enough or anything to help black people. So why he would bring it up and from the beginning of that conversation to the end of it, doesn't make any sense. The only reason he thought a need to bring that up is because he believes that black people are the people that are receiving those benefits, Medicare, that he claims this woman told him they were forcing them to sign more people up for. So let's make it be a black thing and make it be, you know, once again, people are going to get something for nothing. Let's put that out there. And black people happen to be, in his world, the only people that do that. There's no reason for him to have even made the statement. If he had made the second statement first, I don't want people, and not put a color to it, he would have been okay. But he injected racist, and it wasn't even necessary. And unfortunately, you know, that's not the first time. And the longer he stays in, and they're headed now to, after New Hampshire on Tuesday, we know they'll be going down to South Carolina, and that's going to be the test. You know, who's going to speak out the hardest or say the most racially insensitive or, you know, the most racial thing that will fire up everybody in South Carolina? Which one of them is going to do it?
Okay, so I have two problems with the Republican Party if they're going to use this language. And the first one would be, if they are playing to their base, when I hear the term base, when I hear you say it, when I hear pundits say it, when I hear people on TV, commentators say it, then that tends to also tell me that the base of the Republican Party, which I consider the base to be the foundation, the core of a group, and if they're playing to the base, and if race is the base, I don't want to be a part of that. And so when people ask me to give the Republican Party a look, or when I hear, you know, African Americans are not involved in the Republican Party, when I hear all of these things that say that we're not engaged into the conversation when it comes to the GOP, then it's easy for me to say, to look at the, you know, times like this. If you're playing to your base, if you're talking about all black people, if you're talking about that we are the only ones that receive these subsidies, and you're not included in the conversation, big oil companies that are receiving millions times what the poor are receiving, because all poor don't even are not even in the system in a lot of cases. So how, you know, again, it doesn't make sense for me or any African American to be a part of this.
Right, and I think the part for me that's so unsettling is that when I've seen black Republicans on television, they tend to support this nonsense, and that's really unsettling to me. I have yet to hear, and maybe someone has said it and I've missed it, but I've yet to hear one black Republican come on television and do what they love to have everybody else do, and that's denounce any of these candidates for some of the comments they've made. Not one. They will find a way to excuse it away and make it be, oh, it's being blown out of proportion. That's not what he meant. No, that's what he said. It's not about what he meant. It's exactly what he said.
Exactly.
I'm only, you know, it's. I don't really, you don't know what he meant.
Take it out of context.
Said.
Yeah,
but taking out of context. No, this is what he said. And the only person that can undo what he said is, in this particular instance, is Rick Santorum. And the fact that they have yet to, they, as in the black conservatives that I do see on television, have yet to come out and say, you know, that, and even just even statistically, in the states that they're making these comments in Iowa and in New Hampshire, the population for African Americans is one, in New Hampshire is like 1.1%. Really? And this is where you want to go and talk about black people? And we're not even that significant in your state. So in terms of numbers, and so and all of the data shows the percentages that are more other than black that receives federal assistance.
Yeah,
but we don't ever want to call what we do for businesses as federal assistance, as welfare. But that's exactly what it is. And so it's amazing to me. It's amazing to me that not one of them have come out and, you know, at least made a statement to say they disagree with him, that that's not true, you know. But they'll come out on the back end when he's trying to clean it up and say, I don't remember saying that. I could have been talking about the movie Waiting for Superman, which was about black kids. No, Waiting for Superman is about our education system.
Right.
So he even got that wrong. And
right.
The reporter didn't even check him on that. Waiting for Superman was not just about black kids. It's about our education system and how our education system has failed our children across the board.
Yeah, absolutely.
So even that he was wrong on. But, you know, he doesn't get called on it. None of them have, you know, they make these statements, and unless they go on Reverend Al Sharpton show or Ed Schultz show or Rachel Maddow show, they're not going to get called out on this stuff.
And that's what I was saying early on. Looking at this in the lens of, you know, exploring what the Republicans have to offer, exploring what the issues are, exploring how that person can represent me. And when I hear them speaking that language and then to come on television and lie about it, I mean, and then talk about it and try to mix words about it, then I don't understand how a person can support someone like that, you know, especially if they're black. So,
and then you have to wonder, too, you know, you're dealing with a Rick Santorum who didn't have a lot of money as relates to how to campaign and whatnot. So you're probably having, you know, he gets a lot of free press when he makes these sorts of statements, because now people are going to be following him around trying to figure out what he's talking about. So, you know, that's free. That's free advertising when things like that happen. So you have to wonder, you know, if it's all part of some bigger scheme and some bigger strategy.
Yeah, and then, you know, then finally, you know, I'm gonna put him to bed. But for the most part, you know, when you have the actual reporters of the, well, I'm gonna put this in quotes, journalists sit there and they don't challenge them. Or don't ask the second and third question to get to the bottom of the answer is really disgusting. And speaking of disgusting, Newt Gingrich, and again, I'm looking at this through the lens of exploring what Republicans are saying, exploring how they could really help our country. looking at what the issues are. What do they stand for? The people that want to represent the United States of America, that wants to be the president of everybody. What are they saying about everybody? So let me play for you what Newt Gingrich said. So this is not just an isolated incident with Rick Santorum. So let's take a look at another GOP presidential candidate that said this most recently.
Obama is the best food stamp president in American history. More people are in food stamps today because of Obama's policies than ever in history. I would like to be the best paycheck president in American history. Now, there's no neighborhood I know of in America where if you went around and asked people, would you rather your children had food stamps or paychecks, you wouldn't end up with a majority saying they'd rather have a paycheck. And so I'm prepared, if the NAACP invites me, I'll go to their convention and talk about why the African-American community should demand paychecks and not be satisfied with food stamps. Now, I went back and pulled up the exact language of the text. I think you have to be nuts to read those two paragraphs and conclude anything except that I was saying that every young American deserves the right to pursue happiness. Every young American deserves a chance to have a job. Every neighborhood in America deserves a chance to have paychecks instead of food stamps. And what I was saying something which I thought for a Republican candidate would come as a refreshing positive, which is I would be happy to go to the NAACP convention to talk about creating greater opportunities for all Americans. Now, one would have thought that suggesting that at the NAACP convention one might focus on African Americans as a part of that wouldn't be seen as insensitive, but a sign of some awareness of the history of that organization. And for the life of me, I cannot understand why having a conservative Republican who cares about young people have...
Okay, that's enough of that. So... I wanted to play not just the comment that he made when he made the comment verbatim, but I also wanted to play his response to a reporter asking him a question about the comment. And as you see, just like Rick Santorum, he too twisted the words, talking about taking it out of context, trying to reposition himself. But the fact of the matter still remains. He contends that all African Americans, he didn't say some, he said the African American community, with respect to food stamps as opposed to getting paychecks. So again, looking at this through the lens of me exploring the Republican Party, is this something I can get on board with? I don't want nobody else to make my decision for me. I don't want to get my information from anybody else but from the candidates themselves. Then I can make a decision that's for me. As an African-American in the United States of America, can this man represent me? And in statements like that, I don't see how it's possible. Jimmy, you say what?
No, it's not possible. And I don't care how he tries to clean that up. The fact that you want to call this president, you know, which happens to be the first African-American president, a food stamp president in itself is disrespectful, in itself is a lie. On its face, it's a lie. And so the fact that you thought that was okay to even say, not once, not twice, but several times, lets me know how insensitive you are. Because let's talk about the number of jobs that have been lost, that were lost prior to this president coming into office. They were losing close to 400,000 jobs a month prior to the day that President Obama stepped into office. And so you look at the fact that those people whose savings have run out, whose don't have any more time left, don't have any more money left, those are the people that are now receiving the benefits that they didn't need before because now they're no longer working because all the jobs have been shipped overseas thanks to this, you know, some of that is at the foot of President Clinton, but thanks to, you know, what happened under Clinton and Bush. So to make it seem like that all of a sudden that the people that are on food stamps right now just our own food stamps just because we have President Obama in is what does our friend Leo call that, a false equivalency?
That's
that
right.
So not an accurate statement. And I just wish that people in the journalistic world would begin to narrow them down on that stuff and force them to really explain it and not wait for the soundbite. But it's the soundbite that gets the rating. And so I'm probably waiting on something that's never going to happen. And it's irritating and it's frustrating because, like I said earlier, there is a pocket of people that believe this nonsense, that think that there is a core of people of color that's just sitting around waiting on their check. I would say that there is a core of people like that in every race, not just people of color, but in every race. You have some people that want something for nothing, period.
That's right.
What you want, but that's in every group of people. That's in every family. You have some that want to have the big house, but they don't want to go to school. They don't want to go to college. They don't want to struggle. They don't want to save, but they want everything right now. That's in every group. So for him to try to make it be a black thing, okay, that just plays to whoever he's trying to invite over to his side for the moment.
Yeah, that's true. To weigh in on the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Give us a call. Press 1 to talk, 2 to listen. I also have a chat room out there, so feel free to leave your comments or ask your questions out there in the chat room. And so Newt Gingrich, and he continues to group, if you will, to aggregate all African Americans when it comes to being poor, when it comes to getting food stamps, when it comes to receiving subsidies from people all over the United States. So Jima, tell me, how is it then that I would want to be represented by this party? What would make me want to be a part of the Republican Party when they continue to have these people say these, use this type of language?
I have nothing. There's nothing. I haven't heard, and I've listened quite closely over the last couple of months to see if there was going to be something that I could, you know, latch on to and say, oh, that kind of makes sense. But then they cloud it with so much other, you know, nonsense that it's really hard to pick out something. And they probably have, and I've missed it, you know. But like I said, they've clouded it with so much other nonsense that it's hard to really find something to put my teeth into. But it just doesn't – they just go out of their way to make up stuff. That's the other thing. They just go out of their way to create facts that are not facts. They're just opinions. And they go out of their way to try to make one group be the bad group. And it always is – black people. What is their fear of black people? What is that? That's the only way I can't put it in a way. They have some real fear of black people that they have to continue to try to dehumanize us and demoralize us every chance they get. What is that about?
And that's why, again, I want to put this in perspective for people out there listening, that, you know, I was really exploring and just looking at, you know, trying to use my education and saying that I'm not going to take, my insight from just people saying the GOP is bad or the Democrats are bad. Let me do an investigation for myself. And just like I encourage people to go out there and look these things up. That's why I play the sound bite. These are not my opinions. This is exactly comments these people are making. And so we're going to take a quick break. We're going to pay some bills real quick. But when we return, we want to talk about the comments that Lawrence made in Kansas about Michelle Obama, the first lady. He calls her Mrs. Your Mama. Again, another GOP. We'll be back. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my Eastbourne friend.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. The phone lines are open to join the conversation. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So first up, I want to read to you about what The Root had to say about this Mrs. Your Mama controversy. They said, one thing I hate to do is act like a teacher to the clueless. But it's clear, after the Speaker of the Kansas House, Republican Mike O'Neill, forwarded an email with pictures making fun of the First Lady, Michelle Obama's appearance, and calling her Mrs. Your Mama, that school is once again in session. You would think these folks, including Wisconsin GOP Representative James Sensenbrenner, with his unhealthy obsession with what he called the First Lady's large posterior. The South Carolina Republican activist who once compared her to a zoo's escaped gorilla. All I had to say is this right here.
Damn, damn, damn.
When I heard that. And so I can't continue. And, you know, I'm to the point where, of course, I said earlier in my monologue that, you know, I could not find myself, you know, by no shape of the imagination getting involved in the GOP when this continues to be a theme that's running through them and the things they do. And these are just not, you know, regular people. These are elected officials, people that are supposed to uphold the highest amount of respect for these offices. And they continue to conduct themselves in this manner. And to me, it all started with that comment on the floor when that guy said, you lie. Jim, what do you say?
I agree. I totally agree with you 100%. That was the beginning of this complete disrespect, not only of the president, but of his family. In my entire life, I do not recall ever, hearing such nasty, racially motivated comments about another first lady in my life. Never have I heard that. And you want to know why that is, Patrick? And I'm going to put some of this on people of color.
Okay.
And that is because they, white people, generally, don't talk about their white women. We tend to talk about our black women. So we've given them some sort of impression.
Permission.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Giving them permission to do so.
Yeah, we have given them permission. You go back to what even happened a couple of weeks ago with Rihanna and with that magazine calling her the N-word and the B-word, saying they thought it was okay because that's what they hear in the music and that's what they hear all the time. And so they thought it was okay. So we have to own up to the fact that somewhere along the line, you know, we have said it's okay to talk about black women and talk about how you can talk about how big their butts are, how big their teeth are, how big their breasts are, how big their heads are. You can just say anything you want to say about black women. You can just do that, and it's okay. And so somewhere along the line, these people think they've been waiting for the moment to come out and say something, but it has been such disrespect for the office that it's unbelievable to me some of the things that they say, and then some of the things that they try to say and make it be okay.
You know, and so and that's why, you know, I said a couple of weeks ago, we talked about, you know, the whole African American music, the entertainment industry, and the fact that if you was to replace the N word with any other derogatory racial motivated slur, it would be banned from radio.
Oh, for sure. Well, look what happened to Michael Jackson.
Absolutely.
Right.
And so if you replace that word with spick, cracker, anything along those lines,
right,
and it would be pulled from the shelves and would not be tolerated. But at the same
right.
time, they wouldn't allow it to happen. Period. You couldn't even write it down and pretend to put it on songs. And so
right.
again, you know, based on, you know, what you talked about, us giving them permission to do so because we do it to ourselves, and then we frown upon when somebody else do it to us. You hit the nail right on the head. We need to start, especially this year, to begin to respect ourselves by our language. And people can say what they want to. That term is used for a word as a word of endearment. That's a baloney. That word should not be used in that fashion. And any time when it comes to disrespecting our African American women, we should bite our tongue if the thought even across our mind.
Yeah, I agree, and we have to do a much better job of holding each other accountable to that as well. I mean, there's when we hear it, and when we hear people doing it, we ought to say something. When you know, the only reason the records keep selling is because somebody keeps buying them.
That's right.
So if the records were no longer selling, then they wouldn't be, you know, you can turn on some radio stations now, and I don't know if I'm at a club based on, you know, what the songs are that's coming out of the radio. And I'm like, I remember a time when you didn't hear that kind of stuff on the radio. And nowadays it's just free for all. And so we've got to do a better job of saying we won't tolerate it. The reason why, like you said earlier, you don't hear certain things about other ethnic groups is because they don't tolerate it. We tolerate it because somewhere along the line we bought into whatever that lie was that somebody perpetuated, you know, centuries ago, and we have continued to buy into it, and we've built up on it, where now we want to say it's not a problem. It is a problem, and it has been a problem, and it was never a term of endearment. I don't care how we tried to dress it up. I don't care how we tried to say that's what I say to my homie. It was never a term of endearment because in its inception, it was not a term of endearment.
Right. So,
to talk about, you know, the first lady in such a manner and comparing her to animals and comparing her, you know, in such a manner that is just completely disrespectful, I'm tired of it. I mean, I really am. I'm really sick of this nonsense.
And I
want somebody who's bigger mm-hmm. than me, whose voice is louder than mine, to stand up and say something about it. That's what I'm waiting on.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, on the ground floor, what can we do? You know, in the spirit of Leo Baron Hicks, I like to invoke him every now and then because I think he's a great thinker. In the spirit of Leo Baron Hicks, what are some solutions that we can provide? You introduced the whole notion of holding each other accountable. What are some other things that we can do as an African American people, as a culture of people, to begin to nip this in the bud, to begin to stop people disrespecting our race, stop putting us in a bucket of poor and uneducated and ignorant, you know, all of those things that they try to coin us with. How can we begin to turn dial in the other direction?
Well, there's several things we can do. You know, one of the first things you can do is read. You know, read your history and find out, you know, where you come from, where your stock is, how through even the most difficult of situations and seasons and times that you were you're part of the crew that made it over, you know. So that in itself tells you that you are greater than anything that anybody can throw at you. So when you know that you're great, then you behave great. So until we start realizing that the situations that we found ourselves in is not where we were ever supposed to be. That's not where we were ever supposed to be. I was, you know, I did that. There's some places I was never supposed to be, so that's why I didn't stay there long, because that wasn't where I was supposed to be. I've always had a sense of royalty to me, and I say that you go back to our education system, and I've mentioned before that I didn't have a male teacher until I was like in the seventh grade. So all that I saw in front of me teaching me when I was in elementary school were women. So I never thought that I couldn't do or be anything because of what I saw in front of me all the time. So we have to go back to some of those basic lessons of who we are, where we come from, that we really are greater than what they want us to know, because that in itself is the fear that if they really figure out who they are and how much power they have, you look at our economic power and how and the consumption that's in the black community. If
we did
not spend something one day collectively, whether you agree with it or whatever, if we just said one day we're not spending a dime at a store that is not investing in our community, they would have to invest in our community because they could not thrive without us. We don't know that. So we've got to educate one another on the fact that we have a lot more power than what we exercise. We have a lot more power.
So, you mentioned reading and read your history. Talk a little bit about the book we're gonna introduce here at the end of the month, and we're gonna start reading that talks about our history.
This book is entitled let me get it. It's entitled A Slave in the White House. And it is the story of Paul Jennings and at the time President James Madison, and it's written by Elizabeth Rawlings Taylor. It's once again it's entitled "Slave in the White House," and it talks about, you know, his particular story of expecting freedom because that was what was told to him that was going to happen when Madison died, and then after he died. It didn't happen, and the wife took over, and she kept him as a slave, and he had to go and borrow the. It was interesting that he was able to borrow $100 to buy his freedom, so to speak. And by the time he did, his family had been sold off. But it just talks about even back then. He was a man who was a slave, but was very articulate, could write. Could read and write, and actually, what they're saying, he probably has one of the first memoirs coming out of the White House because of what he wrote about during that time. And the author actually spent some time with his great granddaughter, who was able to really shed some light on things that had been passed down through the family. So I am really looking forward to reading this book. I think it's going to give us some insight into what was really happening, and because we've been given such a watered-down version of things that happened back then, and they keep talking about founding fathers and, you know, what our founding fathers did. Well, and what's against the Constitution? Well, let's really take a look at that. You know, if we say what's against the Constitution, there wouldn't be any amendments. So there's a whole lot wouldn't have
right.
based on let's go back to the Constitution.
That's right.
Because
mm-hmm.
the Constitution excluded me. And excluded a whole lot of other people, not just
right.
black people, but women,
women.
In general.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right.
while we're trying to go back somewhere, Michelle Bachmann, you know, to the founding fathers and the Constitution, you wouldn't have even had a voice
mm-hmm.
had it not been for some changes made. So, you know, but see, that's a part of not only our history, but just the history of America that we need to really know. I mean, I think people that come here know more about our history than we know.
Yeah. You know, and so, again, go out there and get the book called A Slave in the White House, and you can get that book from our website. Go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace. Again, that's TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace. We are partners with Amazon.com as well as Google and a couple of other heavy hitters out there. So go out there. The book is in our marketplace. You can also search for many other weight loss, nutrition, books, music, apparel, baby, computers, DVDs, pretty much anything your heart desire, you can purchase out there on our website. Again, it is TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace. Right now we're highlighting a couple of different books. We're highlighting I Gotta Get a Nickname by Paulette Webster Tyson. Also, of the I Sing, A Letter to My Daughters by President Obama, and a few other books out there. Also, The New Cotton is out there by Leo Baron Hicks, an author out there that we had on our show about this time last year. Again, that's TaylorMade101.com. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk sports for a little while. Who's your pick for Super Bowl? And also, the Alabama LSU game is going to be off the chain. So you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in just a minute.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club, or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my East Boom.
Welcome back to Roll Tide, Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323 5805712. Jima, what do you think about the game tomorrow night?
Oh, wow. Well, I will say that, of course, I'm cheering for Alabama for all the right reasons. Outside of the fact that I actually even liked Alabama before I met you. And so I'm just, you know, you just kind of intensifies a little bit. I've always been a Roll Tide girl. So just something about crimson and cream and black that makes me excited. So having said that, of course I'm pulling for Alabama. I hope it's a much better game than the last game when they played. I hope it's a scoring game. This bowl season has been exciting to watch. The Fiesta Bowl was great with Oklahoma State and Stanford. It lived up to its all the hype. The scoring was wonderful, overtime win, all of that stuff. And you look at what happened with Robert Griffin Jr. and Baylor and the kind of game he played and that high-scoring game. So they're going to have to excite. They're going to do some things to make it exciting. So I hope, you know, that the scoring is there and that at the end of the day it's a victory for Alabama.
So what do you make of the controversy around Alabama shouldn't be playing in the national championship? If not Alabama, then who?
Well, then, you know, it should have been Oklahoma State. That's the argument, is that it should have been Oklahoma State because they had one loss, and that Alabama themselves had already lost to LSU, so how did they still remain number two? I think some of it just, you know, goes on the computer, strength of schedule, those sorts of things. But I think the game people really wanted to see was that they wanted to see that LSU and Oklahoma State play. That's what they wanted to see. They've already seen Alabama and LSU, and it was whatever it was. I mean, some people say it was the game of the century. I'm not sure when it was 9-6, and we got field goals out of it. So it was epic. I think that's what they kept saying. This was going to be an epic game, and it didn't live up to that billing. So this particular one hasn't really received a lot of fanfare. It's gotten some, but for the most part, I think people are just kind of like, yeah, whatever, we'll see. You know, if Alabama wins, then it says what it needed to say. It's going to make the statement. Alabama has to win because they're saying they belong, that they're supposed to be there, and that this is really not like, quote-unquote, a rematch, but it's that, you know, the top two teams are playing for the BCS championship.
And that's how I see it. I mean, you know, when you look at the top two teams in the nation, they're playing against each other. It is unfortunate that they – you know, they're in the same conference, you know, the toughest conference in all of football. And so and they meet again. But a two-loss team like Oklahoma State, is that fair for them to get it? And there are other two-loss teams that should be there too, though?
They were a two-loss team. I thought they were a one-loss team, Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State? I believe they were a two-loss team.
Oh, okay.
At any rate, I mean, they still don't, you know, match up to – you know, to like an Alabama would to LSU.
Well, like I stated, the conversation was around the fact that, which I believe they're both one loss teams, and that Alabama had already lost to LSU, and that so it wasn't a need for, and there was some discrepancy as to whether or not Alabama should have finished the season ranked two. That's what the conversation was really about, that they finished the ranking as number two, which then put them back in the championship goal. Championship bowl game against LSU. So I'm hoping that it's exciting. We're here now. It's tomorrow evening. And I'm hoping that it's something that I'm going to say, wow, that was a great game. I will remember that bowl game. Because they have some big shoes to follow behind what happened with the Oklahoma State and Stanford game in the Fiesta Bowl. That was a great game.
So what it sounds like to me then, you like to see all the scoring as opposed to all the defense, because that's the difference of the two games, right? When you talked about the fact that Alabama LSU played and they only had 9 points scored, and the fact that they were all field goals. I mean, it was a tough knockdown, drag out football game, and it was won by special. It was won by mistakes, basically. I mean, they were matched, you know, dollar for dollar, if you will.
Right. Well, I want to see something more than field goals. I want to see a good game. I want to see a good game offensively. I want to see a good game defensively. I think the game will be won on special teams myself. I think something will happen in terms of a punt return or something happening along those lines. It might happen on a defensive play in terms of an interception. I don't think it'll be won just on pure offense. There will, you know, great defense will be played. I do know that. So,
right.
But there has to be more than you know, 15 points for me
right,
to say,
yeah. Right.
Wow,
so,
that was a good bowl game.
Yeah, so Oklahoma State was a one-loss team, but the schedule is what the problem was. So they don't have the strength of schedule like an Alabama. So that kind of says that, you know, if you have a Boise State that goes undefeated with that type of schedule, do they deserve to have you know, play in the national championship when if their schedule is not as tough as an Oklahoma State or Oklahoma and Alabama?
Well, that's the system that we have in place, which I think is a horrible system. But had Boise State gone undefeated, then they would have had a voice in this. They would have had a dog in this fight, you know, because that's the only way they're going to get to a BCS bowl game anyway, because they're not in the conference where they were not. I think they've moved into one for next year. So
yeah, they playing the big boys now.
Yeah, this thing is only going to get more complicated, because a lot of teams have moved around to different conferences trying to strengthen their schedule and trying to strengthen their numbers. And at the end of the day, you know, you're still going to have the Big 12 and the SEC as the powerhouses, and maybe the Pac-10, you know, as your powerhouses. And so everybody else will still be where they are. I'm in total agreement that there needs to be a playoff system, and then, you know, let the chips fall where they may type situation. The one who wins is the one, you know, who should be there. So I'm so thinking that's the best way to go.
Okay, so speaking of playoffs, who's going to win it all in the National Football League?
You know, I can't make that prediction until here's what I'll say. New York looked real good today. They looked really, really good today against Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta only had 2 points. How do you have 2 points in a football game, a National Football League game at that?
Right.
So, Eli, this is Eli's time of the year where he just kind of make things happen. So you really got to be careful with him. And now they got Green Bay next week, so that should be the answer that everybody's looking for. But I'm really, you know, thinking New York, you know, the Giants might do something great next week that will just shudder the world. You know, that this Denver and Pittsburgh game is something to see if you are a Denver fan. It is definitely something to see. I don't, you know if they'll go any further, if they do hang on and beat Pittsburgh, but, you know, at least it gives them a little wind at their back, so to speak. I cannot give – well, I shouldn't say that. I'm not a Saints fan, and I know I got a lot of Saints fans out there listening, and I'm so sorry. But I used to be, and then something happened. I used to like the Saints. I'm not sure what happened. But, you know, they put up a lot of points last night, but I don't think that's something they're going to be able to do throughout the playoffs for sure. So it is, and I think that Houston Texan Baltimore game next week is as they like to say in sports world, I think that's going to be an epic game. I think that's going to be where you tell the men from the boys. That's going to be a good game, because if Baltimore's defense holds in terms of dealing with the running backs and whatnot at Houston, they can go to the next round.
Okay,
so I don't know who's going to go to the Super Bowl. I don't have a pick yet.
that's fair. I mean, it's still kind of shaking us out. Your team, the Dallas Cowboys, right? I mean, what happened to them?
when Romo went down and got hurt, they never recovered, and they didn't play a full season, which is typical for Dallas. Dallas never plays a full 16 games. They'll give you a good 8-9 games, and then you don't know where they are. You know, they lost some games they definitely should not have lost, and it's those games that haunt you at the end of the season. I mean, it's just. And three games, they blew, you know, fourth quarter leads. You know, they don't finish a full season and they don't finish a full four quarters. So until they can work that out and you know, their off season should be somewhere reading some books. They should get about 60 days off, and then they need to be back somewhere working on discipline. I think Dallas can be a lot better. I know you say it every week. Dallas could be a lot better if they played with some discipline. And they haven't played with discipline, in my opinion, in several years now, because some of the same mistakes they were doing this season is what we complained about under Wade Phillips. So
yeah, you know, I think it all boils down
to practice, somebody can take a look at that.
Yeah, some is not happening in practice.
Right.
In game preparation that should be happening, and it's playing out on the field.
Right.
I mean, it's in the communication that happens on the defensive end. It's when you run in a route and then the quarterback throwing it in a different area. I mean, that's all about what's happening in practice and communication.
Right.
So until they get that discipline right on the sidelines and you know and not on Sundays, but you know what happens Monday through Saturday. Is when they're going to start to win games again.
Right. I agree with that. I agree with that wholeheartedly. And they've got to find a suitable backup quarterback. I mean, there is a lot of teams right now who are struggling because they really didn't have a solid backup quarterback. And Dallas is one of them. And Pittsburgh is another one, which is why they're kind of struggling right now in this first half against Denver. They don't, you know, Ben can't do it, and he's throwing interceptions you know, so you know, it's they haven't scored a touchdown. They have 6 points, and I think Denver's at 17. So this is, you know, this is not looking good for teams that did not invest in a backup quarterback. And I don't think you'll see that next year because anything can happen, and you need to still be ready to roll.
Speaking of backup quarterbacks, of course, we all know Peyton was out this year, but the word on the street is they're going to pick Luck as a choice. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, you would think they'd pick the Heisman Trophy winner because that's what they were saying when Luck was supposed to win the Heisman Trophy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That they was going to pick Luck as the, you know, the Heisman Trophy winner. Luck would be going, and he'll, you know. So now that it's Griffin and it's not Luck, I find that to be extremely interesting.
Me
so it
too.
Wasn't that they wanted the Heisman Trophy winner, because I thought they was going after the Heisman Trophy winner.
Right.
So it would
they
be
wanted Luck all the while.
Right. So it would be interesting where Griffin will go next year, because I think the second pick will probably go to St. Louis, and which had a backup quarterback issue there because Sam Bradford was out hurt, you know, majority of the season, and so they could use a good backup quarterback. But I don't think Griffin, I don't think he's going to come in the league starting, but going to St. Louis wouldn't do him any good because Sam Bradford is learning the system as well. So he would need to go to some program, some team that's already somewhat established with a good quarterback that could really teach him some things.
You know, and even if he goes in on a system like that that has a veteran on the team, you're right, he could learn a lot, but he needs to be making his preparation as if he's going to play, because there's a lot of cases when those young quarterbacks came, especially this year. Look at all of the starting quarterbacks this year. They've only been in the season one or 2 years. And a lot of them, so especially the named ones, the named notable ones.
Right.
And so, anything is possible, especially when it comes to that position, because people are always going after the quarterback. So let's shift now to basketball, right? That's a shortened season. We're already in 2012. There's about 6 months remaining. So what's going to happen here? Who's going to be in the finals?
Well, who looks good right now, of course, is Miami. Miami looks real good right now. And that's about all who looks really good, no. my team is
talking like Chuck now.
Right. I mean, really, you know, you have Miami and then you have everybody else, which is, I mean, I guess for all the money they paid, that's what it's supposed to be like, right? They're the only team, I think, that's playing with a sense of urgency. They're playing like a team. Their role players are playing their role, and they understand that they're role players, which is so important when you're talking about basketball. I think Chicago is another team that kind of came off on all cylinders ready to play. You know, Boston stumbled out of the gate. The Lakers stumbled out of the gate. Dallas stumbled out of the gate. So some of your powerhouses stumbled out. Oklahoma City came out strong. New York kind of in the middle. I'm not real sure what they got going on. And they've only added one additional person in terms of Tyson Chandler. So, you know, Stoudemire and Carmelo are going to have to really figure out who's going to be the shooter and who's going to, you know, be the setup man, because I don't think they've really figured out their roles yet. And I really do think coaching has a lot to do with it. I think Kobe is probably more injured than he wants anybody to know. And I think Coach Mike really probably needs to accord. And I agree. I don't know which one of them said this. It may have been Magic that said this the other day, that said, you know, Kobe needs to sit down and rest and get that hand right, because, you know, we don't have a long season. And, you know, in about a month's time, we're going to be talking about All-Star break. And then after that, it's hot and heavy. You know, April will be here before you know it, and we're talking about the playoffs.
Right.
You know, they don't have a lot of time to play. They don't have a lot of time to not heal, you know. And so if you can take a little bit of time right now and let Kobe rest that hand so it's better for him, then go ahead on and take the time. Because you really, you know, when you're going to need him is later, you know, once you make it to the playoffs. So, but I think for all, you know, I think Miami came out the gate ready to play, ready to prove everybody that they should have won the championship last year, and that's their mission, that's their goal to do it right now. So,
you like New York? I mean, the fact that they got Carmelo now and Stoudemire, you think they're going to do anything?
If they can position themselves the right way, and if Tyson Chandler can figure out where he belongs in the mix, until then they're going to sputter and have some good games, and then you'd be like, hey, what was Carmelo doing that game? So you have all, those players, sometimes when they're playing, they get lost. You're like, they're like 2 for 20 or something, and you're trying to figure out, well, how does that happen? Why are you still shooting as opposed to, you know, letting the shot come to you? So they could do better. New York can, for sure. Boston,
right.
I think, you know, the veterans, they're going to play defense, they're going to play hard. The problem is Boston is one of your older teams, and so it takes take our injuries a little longer to heal than they used to. And so when Paul was out, which is, you know, he was out, you know, at the beginning of the season, you noticed that that was an obvious miss in the lineup. So that role player that's stepping in those shoes have got to be ready to fill them. They've got to come out the gate ready to play.
Yeah, that's just true. All right, we're going to take another break, and when we return, I want to ask a simple question. Would you feed your child cookies for breakfast? Would you feed your child cookies for breakfast? You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gema can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my
welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I want to talk a little bit about some job opportunities here before we get back to the show. Specifically, two here. One is the industry leader expanding rapidly is now hiring for sales and management positions, and no experience is necessary. They're offering training and advancement, excellent benefit packages, medical, life, dental, etc. And they also give a cell phone allowance and a gas allowance. Again, this is an industry leader expanding rapidly. It is now hiring sales and management positions. Now, there's no experience necessary. They offer training and advancement, excellent benefit packages, medical, life, and dental. Also, there's a cell phone and a gas allowance. For consideration, please email your resume to bankcarspay@gmail.com. That's BANKCARDPAYS. Bank card pays plural at gmail.com. Also, if you got credit problems, do you have an inaccurate, erroneous, or obsolete late charges, foreclosures, collections, evictions, medical bills, judgments, repossessions, bankruptcies, charge offs, slow payments, plus many others? These items cause you to pay thousands of dollars in interest, overcharges, and evil denial of credit you need. For more information, go to VRTMG.com/DJeffrey. That's Victor Romeo Tango Mike Golf. VRTMG.com/DJeffrey. D, J as in Juliet, E as in Echo, Foxtrot, Foxtrot, E as in Echo, Romeo Y. VRTMG.com/DJeffrey. Okay, so as we move to our last segment, I got a simple question, Jima. Would you feed cookies to your children, to your child, for breakfast?
What kind of cookie?
That's any kind. Let's say Oreo cookies.
No, I wouldn't feed them an Oreo cookie for breakfast.
What kind of cookies would you feed them?
I'm not sure I would feed them a cookie, but I know there's some cookies out there that people are saying can be meal replacements. I don't know if it's for my child, though.
Well, so what's happening now, and there's a nice article out there on NPR that talks about the fact that cereal has just as much sugar in it than their cookies. So I know it is in our minds we look at cookies because of the way they're packaged and the way that they're advertised as being sweet, but we don't look at the same thing for cereal. And the amount of sugar that they're receiving in the cereal that they're eating is just as much or more as it is when they eat cookies for breakfast. So again, I asked the question, would you feed your child cookies for breakfast?
Well, in that context, no. And I have to agree with that as it relates to the cereal and the amount of sugar in some of the cereal. I really do think that's probably why we have a lot of children that may end up with some sort of behavior problems in class,
mm-hmm.
because they
mm-hmm.
own this sugar. And then they come down off of it, and they're not quite sure what to do with it. I really do believe that. So I try my very, 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 very best to supply my son with a wholesome breakfast in the morning that is not cereal. Very seldom does he get cereal during the week. It's generally on the weekends if he gets any cereal. But And for that reason, because of all the sugar. And so I can believe that study. I can believe that.
So let me kind of talk about what the article says. It's called Bun Bun for Breakfast. Most kids' cereal pack enough sugar to be dessert. Too many, a mom, you can't go much lower than a Twinkie. The famous snack sort of epitomizes nutritional bankruptcy. So now we learn that breakfast cereals such as Kellogg's Honey Smacks are even worse in terms of sugar content than a Twinkie. One cup of cereal has 20 grams of sugar compared with 18 grams in the cake. The recommended serving size on the label is 3/4 of a cup. Well, that gets our attention. And a new report by the Environmental Working Group finds that the vast majority of popular cereals marketed to kids, 56 out of 84 EWG looked at, don't meet the voluntary guidelines proposed earlier this year by the Federal Interagency Working Group on Food Marketed to Children. So I bring this up for two reasons. One, we've been fighting obesity nationally for quite some time now. And when you start looking at the behavior of these kids, especially early on, we kind of find there's a direct correlation to what they eat into their obesity and a direct correlation to what they eat to how they act. What do you think about that, Jim? What's happening to our young people these days?
Well, you know, I don't know when the tide turned as it relates to the amounts of things we allow in our food. And it's funny because that's, you know, between the FDA and the EPA, those are, you know, a couple organizations that some of these candidates that are running for president would want to get rid of. And so, you
right,
know,
right.
Not to have, you know, then we have no guidelines and people can just do whatever they want to do and put whatever they want to put in our food supply. I think, you know, that in terms of not having enough exercise, they've taken recess out of schools or it's definitely not as a vital part of the school day as it used to be. I think that has a lot to do with it. I think the foods that, I mean, I don't, you know, I sometimes go to my son's school for lunch and I look at the menu and it's not that very different in terms of what we used to eat, mm-hmm. but I think what's in it is different.
Right.
You know,
right.
What chemicals are in there is what's making it different. And I don't think nobody wants to, you know, be the one that sounds that alarm in terms of what are some of the things that's in our food. I think we have a more, we don't move around as much as we used to.
Mm-hmm.
We used to walk to school. We used to walk to the store. Everything we do now is in a car.
Mm-hmm.
We lived, you know, we were closer to get to places. Even we used to walk to church when I was little. So growing up, and so we don't walk anywhere. So there is another reason why we don't. Our kids are not as healthy as they could be, and they don't really go outside and play, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, you know, and some of it is because some of our communities are not as safe for
right,
our children
right.
to be outside to play. But you know, then we haven't found a way to combat that by creating an environment that's safe, making
mm-hmm.
a place. You know, finding a gym, finding a,
right.
a vacant building and converting it into something
mm-hmm.
that would be a safe haven for our children to go out and play in. So, you know, some of the culpability is on government in terms of what they've allowed to be placed in our food. A large majority is on us as parents and consumers in terms of what we buy now. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, we buy the quick meal as opposed to guilty, peeling the potatoes and making, you know, mashed potatoes. We'll buy the instant potatoes.
Right.
And who really knows what's in the instant potatoes?
I told you that's a science project.
Right. You call it a science project.
I mean, there ain't no way in the world. You take a bunch of flakes and you add some water to it and some heat and it swell up. It's impossible for that to happen.
Well,
I mean, it's strictly science.
Butter.
Chemistry,
it's
in fact.
Butter.
Chemistry. That's what it is, chemistry.
Right. And then you look at the medicines that we're on. I think all of that has a part to play in. I don't think it's one thing. I think it's a combination of that, and we're just not as vigilant and we're just not as aware of, you know, what we're putting into our bodies on a daily basis.
Yeah. So the article is called Bun Buns for Breakfast. That's a question mark there. Most kids' cereals pack enough sugar to be dessert is by Allison Aubrey. And it goes on to say, the top offenders, including Honey Smacks, Apple Jacks, Fruit Loops, and Quaker's Cap'n Crunch all contain more than 41% sugar by weight. The guidelines, meanwhile, for ready-to-eat cereals recommend no more than 26% added sugar by weight. And sugar isn't the only concern. EWG also found in its evaluation of 84 cereals that many also contain more salt, more sodium, and fewer whole grains than the guidelines call for. So, cereal companies, what you say? Well, Kellogg's Vice President of Nutrition, Lisa Sutherland, responded to us with an email statement. She says, Kellogg's has reduced the sugar content of its U.S. kids cereal by 16% since 2007. Plus, she says, Honey Smacks are not marketed to kids and are seldom eaten by them.
Really? That's just like the people on Nickelodeon or whatever that channel was talking about. SpongeBob wasn't for anybody under 7 because
right.
7-year-olds. Really? Well, wait a minute now. Let me check what's on the cereal box for Sugar Smacks or Honey Smacks. Isn't it a frog?
Exactly. But it's not marketed.
Right.
It's not marketed.
So
it says, are not marketed to kids and are seldom eaten by them.
Okay. Okay. Well, that list doesn't surprise me. I'm wondering where Frosted Flakes fit into that category myself. But that list, what you said, and surprisingly enough, those are not cereals that I buy that often for my son. He's pretty basic. He's a Honey Nut Cheerio kind of kid, or right now he's in a Cinnamon Toast Crunch. So I have to check that sugar content on that Cinnamon Toast Crunch and see what's going on there.
Right, and the whole notion, if they've been reducing it by, so many percentage points over the last several years, and just think of the content we haven't been paying attention to over the last
right.
year. So it's very important that we pay close attention to this, because it is what we feed them has a direct impact on, A, their obesity, and then, B, their attitudes. I mean, I cannot overstate the fact that it has an impact on their behavior. And so if you begin to watch what they eat and begin to monitor the sugar content that's in these and what they're eating, then you will probably see a direct correlation into their behavior changes over a period of time. So again, and that's why I wanted to bring that up. And also it's also in this article, it says a study by Yale University Rudd Center have found cereal markers spend upwards of $150 million annually marketing to children just on television. And so and overall the cereals have more sugar, calories, and sodium than non-kid cereals, and less fiber and protein according to the Rudd Center. So to argue that these high sugar content cereal are not marketed to kids are ludicrous, and the fact remains that when you start marketing to adults, They pay closer attention to those things because they're watching their weight, they're watching their health, they have heart conditions and things of that nature. So they pay closer attention to it. And so this article here talks about the study. The study says that the non-kid cereals doesn't have as much of a problem as the ones that are marketed to kids.
Yeah, I can believe that. And I think somebody should do a study as well. Probably over the last 10 years, the increased number of cases of ADHD. I guarantee you that if you take a look at a study of kids that were first diagnosed, what their mm-hmm. diet was,
mm-hmm.
I bet there's a correlation between the two.
Mm-hmm. So it says here, then finally, it says that, so it talks about which kids, they kind of gave them some grades, A to F, on this thing called Food Educate. And they said that the lowest grade went to Quaker's Oats, Captain and Crunch, all berries, and they got a D+. The rest of the worst list were a notch above with a C-. And then they say the cereals that got A's are shredded wheat, multigrain, Cheerios. Cheerios products that have just a few ingredients and just little sugar, says Weinberg. So how many kids did you know that eat shredded wheat, multigrain?
Other than the Frosted Shredded Wheat.
<You're right. laughs> You know, and so even the marketing the material that's associated with that, as opposed to the Captain Crunch and Berries and the ones that I mentioned early on, are a lot different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, any final comments for today? I want you to talk a little bit about you being one in a million before we close out today. We talked about last year. You were in Oprah's Life class, and you finally got the book. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, last year, as you all know, I signed up and I was one of the participants in Oprah's Life class, which could be seen on her own network as well as online on her website. And so one of the things that she mentioned for the first 1 million that signed up for the class, that they would receive a journal. And initially, the journal was supposed to be delivered prior to the start of the class, or at least within a week or so of the start of the class, so one could use the journal to kind of chart one's progress or process through what was happening in the class, be able to take notes and do answer some of the questions that were presented and things of that nature. Well, probably midway through, probably maybe like maybe 3 weeks before the end of the class, you know, people were like, when is the journal's coming? And so she made a statement that the original company that had received the bid basically couldn't, you know, they didn't realize that they wasn't able to make the deadline. And so, of course, she didn't know that they wasn't going to make the deadline until they didn't make the deadline, which kind of angered her to the 10th degree when she was explaining it. So what she said was the journals would be coming and everyone would get a journal. So what I didn't know was where I fell in that millions number. And so probably about a month or so ago, maybe a month and a half ago, I sent an email asking, you know, was I one of the million, and would I be receiving a journal? And so I didn't hear anything back, which was suspicious, because generally they respond when you do an email to them or something. So I didn't get an email back, so I said, oh, I guess I'm not getting a journal. And I had really, really, really forgotten all about the journal. And then on yesterday, as I was checking the mail, there was an envelope in the mail, and it had Oprah's Life class on the outside of the envelope. And I just about lost it because I knew exactly what it was. And I opened it, and it's this beautiful, deep burgundy covered, leather-bound, soft leather cover that says Oprah's Life class on the front. And then on the inside, there's a few words that she spoke, that she wrote down, and you know, how to use the journal in terms of in the life class. So I feel very special today. Felt very special on yesterday that I indeed was one in the million,
right,
that was able to receive this gift, which was free, because even signing up for the class was free.
Mm-hmm.
And so how often, you know, do we get something for free just by participating? And so I am just eternally grateful for this, because I will definitely begin to use it in a way that will help me go to my next level. So I'm thankful for that.
Right. All right, any final comments? Before we go, I just want to do a reminder that this year we'll have our second annual summer feeding program where we actually have three classes. One is for early childhood development. We have pre-K, and then we have a primary class, and we also have a secondary class. And we feed them breakfast and lunch, and we also provide, along with a nutritional meal, we provide educational opportunities, reading, writing, STEM activities. You know, we do a lot of things with the children over the summertime, over six weeks period over the summertime. So go out to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free for the details. And there are three ways you can participate. One, you can go out there and fill out a registration form to volunteer. If you're in the area for the summertime, fill out the registration form. We'll get you checked out and see can we get you to participate and volunteer. And also, you can donate. And just go out to send your donations to TaylorMade101.com. Click on Hunger Free, and there's a little button there. You can click on to donate. And then finally, tell others about the program. You may not be in a position to help, but your company may be in the help. They may do matching donations. They may do contributions. They may have engineers, doctors, lawyers, firemen, professional teachers. They may want to come out and help and talk to the kids over the summertime. So feel free to go out there and get the information again. That is TaylorMade101.com. Click on Hunger Free. Jima, any final thoughts?
Yes, there's two things I want to say. I have to say congratulations and kudos to two of our black fraternities that are taking the bull by the horn, so to speak, and that is the Kappas and the Omegas.
Yo.
They have joined forces and have formed a super PAC entitled 1911 United. And that super PAC is all about not just putting out ads and things as it relates to President Obama's reelection, but also they want to use that to train people and to help get people what they need in terms of with this voting. There's still so many, you know, we're at a point now where we're in January, and that there would be some people in the New Hampshire primary probably that are definitely in South Carolina's that won't be able to vote because they don't have the right credentials to vote. And so this super PAC has been formed to address that, and I think that's an awesome idea. Let's go out and contribute a good thing in terms of how we can ensure that people are going to be not denied the access to vote, but granted. And they're going to be in the, on the ground this week in New Hampshire at the New Hampshire primary, making sure that things are done in order. And that's what we need. So we talk about, you know, what these other super PACs are out there doing. This gives us an opportunity to participate ourselves. And having said that, just vote. Please join some sort of national organization that is committed to the uplifting of our community, whether that's the Rainbow Push, whether that's National Action Network with Reverend Al Sharpton, whether that's the NAACP or whether that's the National Urban League. Find some national organization to join, to become a member of, and to see where you can become an asset to your community, where you can then begin to lend a hand. You know, Scripture says that we are the head and not the tail, and that we are the lender and not the borrower. So we have to begin to position ourselves in such a manner and to carry ourselves in such a manner that we meet that goal. So that's my final thoughts, is to go out, do some, you know, research the organization in terms of the Super PAC. Once again, that's 1911 United Super PAC, and or join some national organization that is all about uplifting our community, and that's all about keeping our community informed.
Well, that's our show for today. Thanks to all my listeners for tuning in. And, of course, a special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the magnificent Jima Hill Cooks. Don't forget to follow her on Twitter, and that's AskJima. That's AskJema. Again, that's at AskJima, AskJema. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Remember, it is written, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.